You're listening to Radio Lightworker with your featured host,
Tom Evans.
So welcome to another in the series Moments of Light. And today I'm thrilled to be talking to Sharon Eden, who's an inner leadership coach and psychotherapist and the author of Whack Around the Head. So welcome, Sharon.
Thank you, Tom. I'm delighted to be here.
Oh, and it's great. So tell me, you know, this show's called Moments of Light, and it's all about people that have had a light bulb moment and then done something about it. And anybody that writes a book, in my estimation, at some point must have woken up and gone, you know what, I'm going to write a book and I'm going to call it X, Y, and Z. So tell me why you decided to, one, write this book, and why you decided to call it Whack Around the Head?
I think there's two reasons, Tom. One reason is that I'm passionate that people's lives are too precious to waste in long-term therapy, ongoing over years and years and years, or long-term coaching going on years and years and years. And I discovered that early in my career when I was teaching psychosynthesis, which some of your listeners might know about, at the City Lit. And instead of lengthy, long meditations, I didn't have time to do that. So I just did 5-minute ones. I only had an hour. And lo and behold, people were getting stuff. Now, I'm not saying that lengthy meditations are not appropriate. They are. But in this class, they were getting stuff very quickly. So that set a little seed in my mind about that. And came to a point in my own career when I don't do long-term therapy anymore. I just do time-limited. And the other light bulb moment was several years ago, me giving out leaflets at London stations during rush hour for an event I was running. And I couldn't believe what I saw. What I saw was George Orwell's 1984. People marching, grey, pallid faces, you know, dead eyes, as if I didn't exist. They just brushed past me. They didn't see me. And I suddenly realized that this was living dead. People at work are often living dead. And that's part of my passion, to help people wake up.
And the whack around the head being the most, the quickest way to do it, then.
Well, it does come from the story I tell in the book about mindfulness and how, you know, thousands of years ago, ancient Zen teachers, well, perhaps not thousands of years ago, but they would have all their students on hard cobbled courtyards kneeling and practicing mindfulness. And if they saw a slightly glazed over eye or, you know, a tiny little micro movement, they would whack them over the head with a stick to bring them into the present moment instead of being in the trance wherever they were before. So that's where the title came from.
So do you think then is that when you saw these people walking in the station and people in general, and I noticed that as well, as because I don't commute very much, so when I do commute in, I notice this whole sort of lemming philosophy and people looking down as well and to the left in that internal dialogue, you know.
Yeah.
And do you think then that most people then, when they're in that state, they're actually thinking perhaps of something that happened yesterday or something that's going to happen at work or something other than being in the now?
That's what I think they do. They're in a trance, thinking about what happened during the day or what they're going to do tonight or what they're going to do tomorrow, or running dialogues through their head, you know, the way people do if they've had a confrontation or running those through their head. Really, we human beings can hypnotize ourselves with all that stuff.
Isn't it fascinating that we've got that ability, though?
Well, think about it. What's imagination? When you go into the realms of imagination, right, it's trance-like. Do you not feel that way?
Absolutely. It's what television does and what films do. And
yes. It's wonderful. It's wonderful. However, if it can be used for good, it can be used for not good. And for people to walk around not present, really, as I call them, living dead, that's no way to live life.
So let me ask you, as a fellow author then, I was very intrigued by your writing style. And I don't think there's one paragraph with more than one or two sentences in there. It's very short. As we're going to video this as well.
Yeah.
And there might be a video version that we also post online as well as the version for Radio Lightworker.
Sure.
I can show people this sort of paragraph style here, such as technology. And was that purposeful?
Yes, it was purposeful. I purposely wrote in small chunks because I think small chunks are more impactful. And also it's a personal preference. If I, you know, am in a bookstore looking at books, something attracts me, I immediately open the book. And if it's got small print and long paragraphs, it's not for me. It's just something in me goes, ooh, no, turgid. And I bought some lovely books by big names because I really wanted to read them. And small print and long paragraphs just does it for me.
And of course, when you look at these new technology, these e-readers and iPads and what have you, then they're designed actually so that pages reflow and you can change the text size so different people with different visual abilities can read them, which is great. So you've actually designed a very e-reader friendly book. Do you realise that?
Wasn't that clever of me?
Indeed, very prescient, I think.
I didn't know about that, actually.
Indeed. Well, the thing is, but you do now and you did then because you know it now, of course.
Absolutely.
So I love some of the language in the book and I've got to ask you about this because I'm intrigued. And what a great pleasure it is to be able to speak to an author as well as read their book. So get out of your box. What's that about?
Well, because our conditioning, what happens to us after birth as we grow up and in adulthood, puts us in a box of attitudes, beliefs, values that aren't necessarily our own, that actually don't fit with our own integrity and our own purpose. And that's what I call being in your box. You know, all the stuff. I actually start going wordless. I'm getting loads of pictures flowing past my eyes. I'm stopping because that's happening. It's as if when we come into the world, I believe that we come with everything we need to be the fully humane person we can be, and everything we need to love, to have a happy life. And what happens to us is that we get taught things which deny that. Deny the connection with our, what I call, out-of-your-box self.
So is this a dis-ease of our modern world specifically?
Well, as I haven't lived any other time, I wouldn't really know, except I do know. I remember in sociology, when I was being taught sociology, that we were told that on Roman walls, you know, centuries and centuries and centuries ago, there were graffiti complaining about teenagers, which I found very funny. You know, way back then, still having the same complaints.
So the Kevins were there in Roman time then, yes. I guess. Fundamental.
Isn't it wonderful? So I don't know. I have a suspicion with our increased materialism that perhaps there's more of it. You know, money's an enormous factor for people. And people I know are doing jobs because of the money and not because it's really in line with what they really want to be doing.
So I guess a job is a typical box that we find ourselves in. And that whole idea that, oh, I've got to go and do this job, even though I don't really like doing it. I don't like commuting. I don't like getting up at 6 o'clock and coming back at night. But I'll do it because I need this money to live.
Yeah.
Are there other types of boxes as well, like relationships and the like?
Oh, yes, absolutely. But I kind of conceive it as a total box. All those bits are components of the total box. Yeah, relationship boxes, friendship boxes, family boxes.
But interestingly enough, and we watch The Box at night, don't we?
Nice one, Tom.
Yeah. So, having said that, a box, I happen to know from another bit of study that I'm doing at the moment personally, is that a box and a cube is also a metaphor for our lives. And one of the things that I've been researching recently is a thing called the cube of space, which is a fantastic bit of esoteric and unknown study, which actually describes our lives as a box, but as a box which has got four dimensions. And when you see the fourth dimension of the box, you can jump out of it.
Wow, I need to read that book.
We'll have a separate discussion about that another day, Sharon. Actually, you can interview me about it. That'd be lovely to do.
Wonderful.
Yeah. So moving on through the book, then I've picked up some wonderful things here, and what the one that really liked me that got me going was the chapter 10, purpose: living dangerously. Now, obviously, people try and stay safe, but what do you mean by that? You're obviously not saying to go and abseil off the top of high buildings.
No, it's all about that when we are in line with our purpose, when we have a real sense of what we're here for, what's our little mission that we can join with everybody else's mission, that we are living dangerously, but it's deliciously dangerously. We're not playing safe. We're not staying in our box. We are allowing ourselves to be seen. And it's really interesting because this morning I watched a TED, you know, one of those wonderful TED videos of somebody who was talking about vulnerability, that actually people who feel worthy, loved and belong, at bottom, they're willing to be vulnerable. And because they're vulnerable, they're being authentic. And that, and when I actually thought about living your purpose when she was talking, that's what it's really about.
So could you share with us then your purpose, Sharon?
Yum, yum, yum. Well, your purpose is never a thing. It's always a theme. So in the early 80s, when I first trained as a therapist, my purpose then was the birthing of humanity for the birthing of humanity. And what that really meant was me, you know, birthing my humanity, getting out of my box so that I'd be able and skilled to work with other people to help them do that themselves.
And how did you make that transition? What was the journey like for you?
Rocky, challenging, times, and I still do sometimes, I look up to the heavens and say, haven't I done enough? Thank you very much. And dangerously wonderful because, you know, becoming more of who I really am rather than who I was trained to be is an absolute joy.
And are you still on that process? Still on the journey?
Okay.
Yeah.
Forever. Well, certainly in this lifetime. I don't know about other lifetimes. With clients, when they come in, the therapy clients, sometimes they will say, when will I be cured or when will I get better? And I say, do you have 3,000 years?
And they say that if you got it, then you shouldn't be on the planet anymore.
Exactly. So they just laugh at that. And I always say 30 seconds before I physically die, I learn something new. I'll just be, you know, rocking and rolling.
So how would someone know they're not on purpose?
Feelings of being unsettled feelings inside, a feeling of what on earth am I doing this for? What's it all about? Depression. Often, and can you hear that sigh?
Mm.
It's that kind of thing that goes on.
I felt that sigh, yes.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
And so those are the signs that you know you're not on purpose, that you're trapped in the box.
Mm.
How do you, you know, apart from maybe booking a session with your good self, how would someone, or buying the book, how would they just start that process of getting outside the box?
Okay. I think the very first step is, instead of trying to push those feelings or whatever away, or trying to anaesthetize yourself with booze or food or going to the gym 10,000 times a week, you actually start noticing what's happening with you. You become your own scientist and you keep a little notebook. You know, when my wife said blah, blah, blah to me this morning, I felt really angry and I just turned away. So that you begin to see your behaviour and what you're doing. And then, once you've made a day's worth of notes, to go back and then ask yourself, but what was really going on when my wife said blah, 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 and I turned away? I was angry and I just turned away. What was really happening inside yourself then? So that kind of makes the connection with your authentic self or out-of-your-box you. Let's say that his wife had said something which really offended his integrity. You know, could be anything really. Really offend his integrity. But in that moment, he didn't know. All he knew was he felt angry and he turned away. But that's learning about yourself. And the next question is, well, what is that about? What's my integrity? So it's a journey of, well, in the book, I describe it as like being a detective or a scientist, that you really begin to explore your own thoughts, feelings and sensations.
And I suppose one way of doing that is as a scientist, a scientist would experiment. So you could say, well, the next time that my wife would anger me, I could experiment with a slightly different response and see what happens.
Absolutely. Excellent.
Yeah. Yes. And the scientific method is observe some phenomenon, try and model it, replicate it, and then from it, then you can form laws, or you can form sort of some sort of theory.
That's right.
And then when the theory falls down, then you have to test it again. You know? So
hypotheses.
Yes, wonderful stuff.
So really, it's being like that with yourself. It's an easy way to start.
Oh, that's fantastic. And so simple.
Yes.
Well, there's a moment of light.
This is what I was talking about earlier, you know, when I really looked at what I was doing as a therapist in long-term therapy, I thought, this is crazy. It's so simple. In fact, I own to having about a two-year-old naive child as part of my personality that actually looks at the world too and goes, but it's so simple. All you have to do is X, Y, Z. But they don't get it.
Yeah, and a lot of those books you're talking about with very small print and long chapters are trying to overcomplicate what is essentially very, very simple, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I would agree with you there. Yeah. And the jargon as well.
Yeah, the jargon. And that's to say that a lot of my job at the moment is that I find myself taking a lot of this esoteric wisdom and just phrasing it in a modern-day vernacular.
Excellent.
In simple worlds. And actually, yeah. I favour the big type. You know, I favour like less words and
excellent.
And more content, if you know what I mean. So
yes, I do. I do.
That works really well. So you've observed a behaviour. You've changed a behaviour. Okay. And what there's another transition to follow, though, isn't there? So once you've done that, then you can start to control what happens a bit more.
Well, I would call it being empowered, really.
Yes.
It's not, for me, it's not about controlling what happens. It's mastering yourself so you can make choices about how you behave and what you want to do. And for me, that doesn't feel like control. It feels like, oh, at long last. You know, I'm all joined up with me.
So is that a bit scary for some people then? Because I use the word control, maybe it's a bit of a masculine term. I didn't mean it in a controlling way. I meant in a sort of manifesting, controlling the world around you way. Not that you are the master of it. But is it also scary to people to know that, you know, the sort of things that they think they can actually manifest? And actually staying in the box is actually a safer place to be.
Of course. It's freedom is terrifying. Taking responsibility for yourself and what you say and what you do is terrifying for some people. And I certainly know in the beginning, I thought, oh my gee. When I started to learn, it was like, It was a big challenge. And I'm laughing because there are two ways to do it. To do it like in little baby steps, right? So that you learn and you gradually become more accustomed to freedom and responsibility and that you can be a creative force in the world, or you jump off the cliff.
And if you jump off the cliff, in your experience, is there any sort of catching mechanism out there?
Well, different people jump off different cliffs. Whether it turns out well or it turns out not well, as far as I'm concerned, that's part of the journey. You know, there has been some real whacks around the head for me in my life, which my personality would say, oh, I wish those hadn't happened. But actually, they were the best things that ever happened to me through jumping off the cliff. I remember when I got divorced, actually, I was terrified. I was absolutely terrified I would end up like a bag lady. And the house that I bought, I didn't even know if I could afford the mortgage. I had no idea. And it was the most wonderful thing to do because I was just in line with what I needed to do. And one way or another, the mortgage got paid. And I just went from strength to strength. However, at the time, it was terrifying.
Yes, and I can imagine for a lot of people then that the redundancy is that jumping, is the force getting pushed off the cliff, isn't it?
It's like, that's right.
you're gonna do the bungee jump and someone's tied you on and then someone else pushes you so you can't get out
exactly.
of it.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I remember when I actually gave up a job when I was 45 and it's the first time in my life when I didn't have another job to go to. And what's always happened is something else has happened, or I've been headhunted, or another opportunity has come up. But at 45, I just went, look, I just can't stand this anymore. I'm just going to jump.
Yeah.
And I had nothing to go to at all. And I went on holiday for 2 weeks. And I came back.
Fabulous.
I just went on holiday for 2 weeks. I came back to the most lovely contract. And then within a year, I started writing. And then, you know, the rest is kind of history.
Absolutely.
So I can testify. It's pretty scary at the time.
Mm.
But and to do it with volition is also even more scary. Just to say, like, I'm not playing this game anymore.
You know? Yes, it is.
And it does actually also then allow you to come back into the game, come back in the box, but actually and act as a guide and as a servant and as a helper. From outside of the box back into the box.
Yes.
I mean, you come in with a stick, though, to do the whacking of people's
absolutely
heads.
Absolutely, stick the whacking. But you're so, you're so spot on about that. It's having the choice in certain contexts, in certain situations. There are ways that we need to behave in order to communicate with the people in those contexts. And sometimes that does involve getting back into the box. But you can have fun with it. For example, you know, you're right, with redundancies, everything that's going on at the moment, politics in organisations is heightened, actually, the games that people play. And I work with clients and I tell them that politics is sexy, actually. It's just about getting leverage, that's all. And if you actually are aware of what you're doing for good intent, for yourself and others, you can have fun with that.
Do you think it's fun that's missing in all of this? Has everyone just got a bit too serious?
I think so. The guy who founded psychosynthesis was called Roberto Assagioli. He was an Italian, very, very learned man. And when I trained, luckily, my trainers were people who had trained with him. And they told this lovely little story when he was really old and somebody very important from a foreign government came to see him. And they had time together in his study and the important person left. And he stood at the top of his steps going, goodbye, goodbye, goodbye. Just having fun. You know, that's what we need to do.
So just lighten up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just lighten up. Then there's no need for the stick.
Well, it is a metaphorical stick, after all.
Of course it is, yes. And I guess if you start to bring a stick in, people might try and bring a bigger stick in with them as well and hit you back with it. So you have to be a bit careful with it.
No.
So tell me, I'm fascinated by how psychosynthesis and how does that work? How do you use it in therapy? How would you benefit from it?
Have you got about 2 months?
We can do the sort of 30-second lift version, right. Elevator pitch version of it.
You need to understand that Acciaiuoli was the first psychoanalyst in Italy. So he knew Freud, Jung, you know, all the big names of the day. But like many people who were students of Freud, he split with him because he said he didn't just want people mucking around in the basement of their being. He wanted them to be able to stand on the roof and look at the stars. So psychosynthesis includes body, feelings, mind, and your oomph, whatever you believe your oomph to be. And it sees, it has a bifocal vision. So when anybody comes in to work, okay, there's the personality stuff, but also you see them as a soul evolving. And whatever pain they're bringing or problem, you see as a clue to their potential. What's needing to emerge here? Where's their soul pushing them? What's the organic urge to grow here? So there are loads of wonderful techniques, some of them quite ancient, but again, I love their simplicity. People don't have to troll through their histories and cathart, cathart, cathart. You actually do the healing work in the moment now, referring to history for sure. And I just love it. I've turned in so many other things, Tom, in Gestalt, cognitive behavioral, NLP, to name a few. And my core framework remains psychosynthesis because it's simplicity.
I like the sound of it. Well, just make one observation and perhaps give you a new title for your next book.
Okay.
Is that psychosynthesis to me sounds like what I do naturally. I've not been on the course, so I love it already, right? And you now inspired me. I want to swap notes at the end and tell me what book I should buy, the Idiot's Guide to Psychosynthesis, yeah, to get my head around it all. But finding your oomph is such an evocative idea,
yes,
isn't it? And surely when you've had a whack around your head, don't you want to find your oomph? And is that your sequel?
Aha, finding your oomph. It's lovely.
Is that the moment? I mean, in all these moments of light show, by the way, we always have a moment of light in the show. So maybe that could be it. So, and to me, one of the issues with something like psychosynthesis, because it's got the name psycho in it, of course, then it just had all these connotations. But if you've got, you know, whack around the head or finding your oomph, they're very accessible, aren't they, as ideas?
Absolutely.
And so when you work with people, how do you go about that that process of finding the oomph? Because that just sounds so powerful to me.
Well, actually, I don't do anything. We do the work, whatever the work is, and there's a knowing. I heard the phrase the other day, silent knowing. It was a phrase in a Wayne Dyer book about intention. And I thought that is so lovely. I'm going wordless because it is so wordless.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, it is. It's totally wordless. So it will be a look that we share between us, right? It could be suddenly they reach a truth for them that they'd never reached before. It's so hard to describe because it is wordless, and how each person finds their oomph can be quite individual.
So, you know, in that train station when you're handing out those leaflets saw all the lemmings, could you also spot somebody in that throng that might actually have found their oomph? Can you see the oomph as it walks along?
Can I see the oomph as it walks along? For me, personally, it's something about the eyes.
Mm-hmm.
That you just know. If I just tell you briefly the short story, I was studying a psychology degree and very, very disillusioned with it all. And to cut a long story short, a woman on my course introduced me to psychosynthesis. And she had to go to their office, which in those days was in Stockwell. And she'd, well, come with me and then we'll have lunch. So I went there and I met some people you know, who were headed up the organisation. And that was really lovely. And when we walked out, I said to her, are you all Martians? You all look at me with the same kind of eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And she laughed. But of course, you know, once I started working on myself, I began to understand, because when you are connected with your oomph, there is a different way of seeing and a different way of connecting with people.
And so we live in this sort of, obviously, we live in a visual world, and we happen to be videoing this as well. So for the listeners here, I'm hoping that we'll be able to create a video version as well that you can key into and see into our eyes too. But can you also see it in text, and can you hear it?
I do hear it. Thank you, Tom. I'd never thought of that, actually. Yeah, I do hear it. And I hear it through my body, for reasons of my own development as a child. Originally, I was very kinesthetic, so I would take loads of information in through my body and often get quite bewildered because I didn't understand what these sensations were and I thought they were mine. So I think you're right. I couldn't say how I hear it,
mm-hmm.
and I do hear it through my body.
Well, it sounds like you've got some synesthetic qualities there.
You know? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, when you get different senses. And obviously there's a lot of crystal and indigo children that are coming in at the moment that can be quite confused by these amazing powers. Yeah, and it strikes me that there's a huge correlation between the work that that Rachel Willis and the Lightworker group do.
Yeah.
And en masse, there's a whole bunch of people there that have found or finding their oomph.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and are working across the senses as well, you know, so that they're working right across the senses, and also some of the six senses. You know, so for example, I know when I see clients now that spontaneously in me, after I did that jump when I was 45, I went on a few courses. And to cut a long story short, I started seeing auras, and I started seeing past lives and future lives, and had a client in this week where and this might sound strange for an electronic engineer, that she got replaced by her guide that came in from Venus, and so literally all sorts of weird and wonderful things happen. So when you sort of talk about Martians and Venusians, they kind of exist. It's just that we're so blinkered into this life must be carbon-based and it must look like us and have two legs and two arms and that sort of thing. You know, life exists on so many different levels.
It does. And you're, you know, talking about those energies, I, you know, sometimes people say to me, are you psychic? And I say, I have no idea whether I am or I'm not. But I certainly know that I do pick up information that there's just no way I could know about. And I if it feels important, I feed it back, like saying, does XYZ mean anything to you? And often it's just the thing, you know, that makes difference. And
yes, indeed.
I know, it's just fantastic. And you know, for me, it's like, well, I'm getting it from somewhere. I mean, Jung actually said that between the therapist and the therapy, he called it the conunctio. And he talked about the two unconsciousnesses meeting there so that the therapist could take information from that. And the client also would benefit in some way from that meeting at the unconscious level.
This is absolutely wonderful stuff, and stuff that I've certainly experienced. But materialistic science doesn't allow it in just yet, does it?
Well, it can't measure it.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you can't measure it, it doesn't exist. But plenty of scientists have been mystics as well.
Of course, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, because, you know, when you get to that level, there is the meeting.
It's indeed, just, yeah. They say the geeks are the new alchemists, don't they?
I've not heard that. I love it. The Geeks of the New Alchemist.
That's for sure. Yeah.
It's wonderful, Tom.
So, Sharon, so if someone wants to get in touch with you, what's the best way to get in touch?
The best way to get in touch is to go to my website, which is SharonEden.biz, B-I-Z. You can email me, you can call me, you can yell at me over the airwaves, connect with me any way you want. I'd be delighted to hear from you.
So if someone's stuck in a box, wants to find their oomph, and let me see if I can get this word right, also wants to experience the conunctio, is that the right word?
Well done.
Fantastic. And so it's worth getting in touch. And I have to say, the book is really, it's a really easy read. There are no big words in it. It's really, really simple. I certainly felt several whacks around the head when I read it. So can we also just set a date, Sharon, to talk in the future about cubes and other types of metaphysical boxes?
Absolutely, I'd love.
And we have another date to talk about oomph as well.
Yes.
And finding your oomph, that would be great. It would be a great pleasure.
Excellent.
Well, listen, it's been great to talk to you today. Loads of wonderful thoughts there, loads of moments of light. And are you going to write that book?
Oh, there will be another book coming.
Fabulous. And so the book's available on Amazon, is that right?
That's absolutely right, Tom.
Yeah.
It's available on Amazon here and in the States. And on other sites, actually, if you actually just Google it, you'll connect with places where it is.
Great to talk to you again, Sharon. We'll be in touch and love to have you back on the show in the very near future.
Thank you, Tom. It's been a pleasure.
Have a great weekend.
You too.
Bye.
Bye.